The show you have selected will start directly after the next message.
If you are passionate about food and how it supports well-being and health, learn more. The Institute for Optimum Nutrition has been training nutritional therapists for 35 years on its highly acclaimed and accredited diploma courses. Start your new career in nutritional therapy, one that will make a difference and help others achieve their health goals. Train with the home of nutritional therapy education. Find us online and give us a call or click on the IOM banner on the UK Health Radio homepage.
Hello and welcome to Talk Fertility, a show where we do just that, talk about fertility. I'm Natalie Silverman, host of the Fertility Podcast, which I launched in 2015, once successfully pregnant after having fertility treatment.
And I'm Kate Davis, a trained fertility nurse and founder of Your Fertility Journey, where I work one-to-one with women and couples to help them understand and optimise their fertility.
So Kate and I are delighted to welcome Mr. Mohamed Taranassi, who's the Medical Director of the ARGC, to the show. Welcome, Mr. Taranassi.
Thank you.
Lovely to have you here.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
We, working in this space, know about the ARGC, and we're both very keen to talk about you because you've got a very impressive reputation. And I've heard about you and have only recently started to really understand what it is you do.
A lot of patients that I work with are considering going to the ARGC. And like Natalie, I hear really, really good things from them about any experiences that they have at the ARGC. Your website talks about that 75% of patients come to the ARGC after having failed cycles elsewhere. What kind of issues do they tend to have had from other clinics before they come to you?
Well, I mean, it's very difficult because I don't think there is one issue that you can probably identify for all the patients, but it's a multitude of problems. And I mean, over the years, we've always attracted people who have found it difficult to achieve success in other places. And I think probably more than 75% of our patients actually have repeated failures elsewhere. I would say maybe 80 to 85%. And I think most of them come to us because we probably do things a little bit different. And we also, I think they call the ARGC as IVF bootcamp because we have like intense monitoring. We make sure that we stay on top of the treatment on a daily basis, make sure that if we need to adjust the medication, we do this regularly. If we need to add medication, then we do this as well. There is a lot of preparation that goes into the cycle as well before they start the treatment, making sure that you know exactly what you're up against. And if there is a problem that you can rectify before the cycle, then you should do that to maximize the chances of a good response and a good outcome. So it's a variety of steps that need to be put into place to make sure that at the end of the day, regardless of the outcome, everybody feels that everything has been done to give them the success.
Okay. I mean, you talked about some of the intensity there. I don't know how you feel about the use of boot camp when people describe your clinic, but that intensity of the protocol, is that suitable for everybody? I mean, do people have to...
No. Right. It's not suitable for everybody. But because I said that the majority of our patients are patients who have failed repeatedly elsewhere, so they're not definitely a candidate for the standard routine sort of approach to the treatment. I mean, obviously, people who probably start the journey and there is an identifiable problem and so on and so forth, they probably wouldn't need the same intense monitoring. But anybody who have failed, and most of our patients have failed many, many, many times, and you need to be able to identify any subtle changes that can happen during the treatment. And the earlier you know about this and the earlier you adjust the medication, you're more likely to have a good outcome at the end of the day. So it's just the nature of the people that we see here that dictate the approach. And I think most patients actually are quite happy because we've heard this many, many, many times from people who come here. They always say this is a completely different experience in terms of how they find that there is a feedback on a daily basis. I put a lot of stress on the clinic as well and on the service that we provide because you have to be available 7 days a week, and this happens for 365 days throughout the whole year. So we are open on Christmas Day, for example. It's not uncommon if you come here on Christmas Day that you have like 30, 40 patients coming and trying to do everything and leave within a couple of hours. So we never close. So that's
quite unusual, isn't it, to be open on Christmas Day? I've not heard of other clinics being open
I think we're probably the only clinic, as far as I'm aware, who does that. And we've done this every single year, so for the last 25 years almost.
And is that in response to the intensity of the monitoring and the scanning? And it's just obviously, you know, if you need to do your trigger, you need, and it's Christmas Eve, you need to come in, don't you?
Of course. And also because one way of how we operate, and I know some people may disagree with this, I've always felt that people who've got problems, particularly as they grow older and so on, you need to be a little bit selective in which cycle you take them for the treatment. And sometimes they need to check the hormones at the beginning of the cycle, and we can just wait a month or two or three until we hit what we believe is a better cycle for them. And if this cycle happens to be, I don't know, around Christmas time, you cannot just say, sorry, we're closed, because this may not happen again for another few months. So the way we approach the problems, I mean, dictate that we have to be available for people weekends, Christmas Day, New Year's Day, whatever. And that's part and parcel of the service that we provide here.
One question that I'm really interested to find out from you, and particularly because it's a topic we've been covering over the last few weeks, we've been talking quite a lot about men and male factor infertility. And how much focus is put on men in your clinic if they've come to you having had the basic tests elsewhere?
I mean, again, the success is dependent on the man and the woman. So you have to make sure that you've done your preparation and your assessment on both of them before you start the treatment. And sometimes, I mean, to try and maximize the chances for if there is a problem with the sperm, it may be some simple advice like, I don't know, change of the lifestyles. If somebody's heavy smoker, heavy drinker, things like that. Sometimes you have to, when you examine the male partner, I mean, if he has issues like varicocele or whatever, you may need to talk to them about whether they would consider doing something about that. So there are all sorts of things that needs to be looked at before you can start the treatment. And you have to always work on both the male and the female to maximize the chances. And always ICSI, probably most of the male problems can be rectified by that. But sometimes you may not even need to get to ICSI. I mean, you may just need some simple advice, and that's all what will be enough for people to sort out the problems.
So if couples are coming to you having had failed cycles, and there's been maybe equal emphasis on the men and the woman, would you look more at the man just to check?
Unless there is a clear problem. I mean, I think the reality is, I mean, most of the emphasis is on the female partner, because most of them have either issue with the hormones, their performance wasn't very good in terms of response. They may have also an implantation problem, which we believe in it. And we've been investigating this for the last, I would say, 17, 18 years. So I would say, on balance, I think there is a lot of work that seems to happen on the female side, but this doesn't mean that you have to neglect at least a basic assessment of the male partner as well.
We're hearing stats that it is a 50-50 male-female issue, and I was just curious, is that not presenting in the patients that you're seeing?
No, it is presenting, but I mean, the things that you can rectify by other methods is very limited. There isn't really much that you can do apart from actually when you go through the treatment and you do ICSI, which is basically selecting the best sperm and injecting them physically into the egg. That's probably the solution for a substantial percentage of the men who have problems.
So things like sperm DNA fragmentation test, if there's been a couple that have had multiple failed cycles, would that not be something if they've come?
Well, it is something that we consider as well. But at the end of the day, you're still going to resort to doing ICSI. So, I mean, unless something that is going to change drastically your approach to the treatment, sometimes it's just maybe more time wasted and more money down that they will have to spend and so on and so forth. So you really need to make individual decisions. I don't think you should just have a general approach that you do a list of tests to everybody, regardless of what the background problem is.
Would you engage urologists or andrologists as well with treatments, particularly with male fertility factor?
Yes, we do. I mean, we have a few andrologists that we work with, and sometimes they make an assessment. They might also do some procedures for the patient if it felt it's appropriate and so on.
Again, another subject that we're looking at quite a lot is the kind of support that you have in the clinic and what you offer to couples or individuals, particularly when they've lost all hope. We've been talking to various people that are having come to some resolution, perhaps at the end of their fertility journey. What kind of support do you offer as a clinic to that type of individual?
I think the most important support is to be able to try and make a proper assessment of the condition and then advising them accordingly. I think that's what most people come here trying to find out whether, okay, are we going to do anything different? Can we improve on their experience and so on and so forth? And if you give them clear answers, whether these answers are towards a further treatment or whether just answers to say that, okay, we don't think that we can really do more than what happened before, I think a lot of people will feel comfortable with that. The treatment itself is a very stressful experience, and it's very expensive. And particularly people who come to us here, because a lot of the patient, they see us as a last resort. So if we cannot really help them, it's very difficult for them to take this. And we need to be able to understand that it's part of the treatment. We need to be able to accommodate sometimes people become a bit irrational when things don't happen or they feel that, okay, you can't really help them and so on and so forth. Not everybody is going to be open to the alternative treatment, things like egg donation, surrogacy, adoption, things like that. So all of this is part of the assessment that any clinician or any clinic should take into account, and they need to be able to deal with it.
You just said people come to you expecting as the kind of last resort. And so if the reality is it might be best for them, for their emotional well-being, to stop. I mean, that must be an impossible situation to have to be in as a clinic. How do you have those difficult conversations?
It is a difficult situation, but I think at the end of the day, the role of the clinic or the clinician is not just to make the decisions on behalf of the patient. It's actually to put all the facts in a very, very clear and fair way to them. I might just advise them about what I would have done if it was for me. But I think the decision should come from the patient at the end of the day. But it has to be based on a very clear assessment and a very honest recommendation about what is possible and what is not possible. And not every case that anybody would treat will be successful. But sometimes, from our experience, I think a lot of the patients that we see, there is always maybe a little bit more that can be done, because we probably do a few extra things and stuff like that. And this is something that we can discuss with them. And if we feel it's appropriate to the case, we can just explain it to them. And if they're happy to consider it, then that's fine. And most patients come here expecting that we have a different approach to whatever they might have had before.
So clearly, when a patient is considering options for clinics and looking at different clinics, one of the most important factors is to look at success rates. And I know that ARGC have really good success rates. And one of my patients recently said, you know, termed it as, we wanted the best, we went to the best of the best in your clinic. Can you talk about your success rates, particularly as your website shows pregnancy rates? And I'm really curious about the live birth rates.
Normally the pregnancy rate is the most up to date, because that's the last thing that you can actually show to people. But also live birth rate is probably the most important, because this is what realistically what you need.
Sure.
But it's not good enough to be pregnant and then lose the baby, I don't know, early in the pregnancy or worse still later on during the pregnancy. The way we publish results or put the results on our website, we've only published results that has been published by the HFEA. We never really put anything that cannot be verified on the HFEA website. And I don't know whether you know this, but the HFEA has not really updated the success rates for at least 3 years. I think some of the success rates currently on the HFEA website, particularly for things like live birth rate per egg collection, for example, which I think is a very good way of assessing the chances of success from a cycle, because it takes into account fresh and frozen. They are 7 years out of date. I mean, the latest results on the HFEA website for this particular success rate is for 2012. So,
gosh.
I mean,
quite misleading, isn't it?
That's what I'm trying to say. And I actually, I'm the one who actually wrote to the HFEA in the 3-4 months ago and asked them to do something about this. And I think the plan is for them to update the results hopefully in the next few months. But the results have not been updated for quite some time. And there's no point, and I don't like to put success rates that has not been verified. So people can look at what we have put. They can see whether it's different from what's on the HFEA website. And if it's different, then you need to ask us questions. But we've always put statistics that are published on the HFEA website, and also for the period that is covered by the statistics on the HFEA website.
Because that's crucial. Like I said right at the very beginning, it's crucial information. And certainly I always direct my patients when they're considering a clinic to the HFEA website to look at pregnancy rates as a way of redetermining kind of which clinics they want to narrow down. And equally, I think pregnancy rates are incredibly important, and so are live birth rates. But also I always say to them, you know, get a feel for the clinic. The most important thing is that you're really happy with the clinic, that you go to a open day, visit the clinic, go and see how you feel. When you're in that clinic, or you walk out of the clinic and you feel like, yeah, this is the one for me, then invariably it is the right one for them. I think there's quite a lot of evidence to suggest that if you have confidence in your clinic and you feel really happy there, that actually your rates of success are going to be greater.
Yeah, of course. But I think at the end of the day, what really matters is whether you're going to have a baby at the end of the cycle. Mm. I think that's the most important thing. That's what everybody would like to achieve at the end of the treatment. It is very confusing to people to try and assess exactly what the statistics represent and so on and so forth, because there are different ways of presenting the statistics, and every one of them actually have a completely different meaning. And unless you can explain this to people in a simplified way, it could be very confusing. I mean, to put emphasis on success rate per embryo transferred, for example, it doesn't actually reflect the performance of all the patients who go through the treatment. And it could be eventually encouraging people to cancel cycles and stuff like that, because you will only be judged by the people who get to the embryo transfer. That's not a fair reflection of the performance of a clinic, and that's not a fair reflection that will tell the patients what the chances would be from the day they start the treatment, not when the day they end the treatment. And there's a lot of effort that goes into the cycle to try and get the patients to the egg collection stage and to the embryo transfer stage. There's a lot of skills involved into that. It's difficult for patients actually to understand that. And particularly also when you do it per embryo transfer, so you take into account the number of embryos that have been transferred, and if you transfer two embryos, then your success rate is going to be reduced by 50%, not knowing that the number of embryos that any clinic put in the patients is not actually determined by the clinic. I mean, there are rules and regulations and criteria that are set up by the professional bodies that all the clinics have to follow. So whether you put a single or double or even three embryo transfer is determined by the characteristics of the patient that you treat. It's not down to me as a clinician to decide, oh, I'm going to put a single embryo transfer when it's not indicated. So, and that's something that's fundamental for people to understand. It's the same for every clinic.
So we're trying to, I suppose, make it easier for patients to understand. And we've jumped right into the treatment part. If people are listening to this and maybe are at the early stages of just finding out that they need to have treatment, what definitive advice would you then say for patients to try and assess when they're making their decision on clinics when it comes to success rates, if they can find the live birth rates? Because I know you were saying what's on your website is in line with the HFEA, but there's not even previous live birth rates there. So is there, and I know we can't do one number, but is there an easier way for people to look at the success rates, would you say?
Well, I think if you want to look at the success rates, then obviously you need to look at, first of all, age groups, because the chances of somebody who is younger, let's say below 35, is not going to be the same if you are above 40. You need to look at the age group that is particularly specific to the patient. You need also to look at the success rates per cycle started, because this will take into account all the patients in that age group that they're going to go through the treatment, not a selected percentage of them. So I think these are the two simple things that people can look at. You need also to try and look at the most up-to-date results, because you could see that sometimes performance can fluctuate from time to time in various clinics. So you may do very well in 1 year, but maybe not so well the following year. So you need to look at the most up-to-date results. These results are always verified by the HFEA and audited by the HFEA and so on. And that's basically, if you're talking about success rate, that's the best way to look at that.
So with ARGC, your pregnancy rate for under 35 years of age is 80.2%. How do you get such consistently high results? And I know that you've mentioned that you know do other things, perhaps the clinics may not do. Is that the secret to your success, or what is the secret to your success?
Well, I don't think you can say it's a secret, because we've always felt that you have to assess all the factors that can have an impact on the performance and the success rates. And I think most people in this business, I mean, their main focus is on the embryo quality and the egg quality and so on and so forth. Because of the nature of the people that we get to see in our clinics, a lot of the patients that come to us, their primary problem seems to be what happens after the embryos are put back into the body. And this is a very gray area in medicine. It's a very controversial. It's essentially what we call implantation problems. And even with the best embryos, if there is a problem in how the body is going to be receptive to those embryos, you're not going to go very far. Even if you achieve a pregnancy, normally the pregnancy either is going to fail or you're going to have a miscarriage or all sorts of things. So we always looked at this side of the story as well. And we've always said that the embryo quality is 50% and the other 50% is the body and how the body will look after the embryos. And this is what, I don't know, comes under the characterization of add-ons and stuff like that, which I know is a very hot topic now and there's a lot of talk about it. That's why I think as a patient, if I was starting the treatment today, or even for the ones who've been doing treatment and they've not been successful and so on, there's a lot of information out there and a lot of these information are quite conflicting and contradictory. And it's very, very difficult for a patient to try and find the way and navigate the way through all these wells of information that is coming from what appear to be reliable sources. But the reality is they don't match. I mean, some people can tell you do this, some other people tell you the exact opposite. So I can understand the dilemma that most patients can face sometimes. And I would have expected that, I don't know, the HFEA should have played a bigger role into making sure that they have a neutral stand on things and put information that is focused on the basic stuff in a very clear way and so on and so forth. But that doesn't seem to be the case. And it's something that, I don't know, I mean, I actually feel for the patient and I know it's very difficult for them to try and understand what different people are telling them. And I think people need to look at the facts and they can make up their own conclusion.
Yeah, well, I think that's what it's all about, isn't it? It's giving people the information so they can make informed decisions.
Yeah, that's very, very important.
If patients are coming to you and they're asking about add-ons and say there's a red light on the HFEA website, but you've done some research and you've got data that has been shared. I mean, how does the conversation unfold? It might have been something that's been going for 20 years and the patient might be saying, well, why has it got red light if it's been going for 20 years and it sounds like the right kind of thing that we need? I mean, how do those conversations pan out?
Well, I think the question about red light and so on is not a question for me. It's a question for the HFEA. I can only tell you from my own experience that I wouldn't give this a red light at all. I mean, if anything, it's a very green light as far as I'm concerned and as far as my experience tells me. We've seen this many, many, many times. I mean, we've got thousands of patients who can reflect on their experience and tell you exactly what happened with them when they had this treatment that is supposed to be a red light. And medicine is about views, and you may have different ways of getting to the same outcome. And it's up to the patient to try and listen to the arguments or reflect on the experience of whoever is presenting a particular treatment to them. And people make their own decisions at the end of the day. I mean, you don't force anybody to do anything. We work in a private setup as well, so people choose to come and they also may choose not to continue treatment here. So it's not like, okay, this is something that has to happen or whatever. You just put your argument to people, explain to them your experience and say to them what you believe might give them a good chance. And some people, sometimes they don't want to have this and we never force anybody. We just tell them that, okay, this is our experience and if they're happy to have the treatment, then we'll offer it to them.
So we're talking in what is now the 41st year of this amazing science Kate was talking about, is experimental nature leading us to where we're at. How do you feel about where we're at then with what's available for patients, their understanding of the information when it comes to their decisions? Because you're basically saying, I'm disagreeing with such and such a treatment. Here's my patients that have had success. Do you feel that the industry is in a good place from a patient's point of view?
Well, definitely things have improved a lot from the early days of IVF. And in the last 40 years, you can look at the success rates, for example, and where it started and where it is now. So definitely there is a big, big, big improvement. There is also more awareness of what the technology can help can offer to people and help them achieve their goals and stuff like that. I don't think IVF or fertility treatment is a taboo anymore, because I think almost everybody knows somebody who had IVF treatment or similar treatment and so on and so forth. So it's becoming part and parcel of life in the current society and so on. Also, IVF technology seem to have expanded to cover areas that are not infertility related, like PGD, PGS, stuff like that. And I think it's more and more going to expand into other areas that, as I said, it's not just for the infertile couple or people who have difficulty in conceiving. So overall, I think that's an improvement, and I think hopefully this will continue to happen, and it's the collective effort of everybody working in this field that will allow this development to continue and be used for the benefit of people.
When you say other areas, do you mean, for example, treatment with same-sex couples?
That's one area, because obviously that's not an infertility problem.
Sure.
That's a lifestyle choice, and allow people who are in this kind of relationship to also have their own family. So that's obviously something that is on the up, and we see more and more patients who come who want treatment for this particular situation. I'm very happy even to have a debate with whoever is on the other side, and I think I've always felt that this is a good way for people to really make up their own mind. If they can hear what I'm saying now, it would have been far better if there's someone else who have a different view who can actually respond to what I'm saying there and then. Mm. And then they can make their own mind about it. It's all done for a good reason.
Well, exactly. We're trying to facilitate the conversation.
The intention is to try and find a way that is beneficial to the patients, because that's what we are all here to do, be it the clinic or be it the regulator. And sometimes, I mean, this doesn't happen, but I mean, we should all be grown up and try and just find a way to collaborate and work in the right way.
Well, we've put it out there, so maybe it's time to get those boxing gloves out, Mr. Taranassi, and right. We might have to see if we can facilitate the debate right here.
It's been
really insightful hearing what you think and how you feel and hearing about the clinic. And I know, Kate, from the people that you speak to on a regular basis, it will have given you quite a lot to pass on as well.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Thank you for your time.
Anyway. No, it's a pleasure. It's a pleasure. Thank you so much anyway.
In that conversation, you heard us refer to the HFEA, which is the government regulator of fertility clinics. If you're just starting to look into what your options might be with regards to fertility treatment, then the HFEA is a place to try and get your head around how to choose a clinic. And I actually spoke with the HFEA on the launch of their brand new website, and I wanted to share a bit of that with you as they explain their objective for redesigning their website to make it much more user-friendly, and also how they want patient feedback as part of your clinic experience. So have a listen, and don't forget that the full episode will be available via thefertilitypodcast.com.
We look after lots of data and statistics that we collect from all the clinics that we license. And so every treatment that happens, and has happened for the last 25 years in the UK since we've been in existence, all those, all that information we collect and we store, obviously, very securely, so that we can publish statistics about each clinic and all the different treatments that they offer, their birth statistics, their multiple birth rate, and we also publish national reports as well. And we use that information to offer services to people who've had donor conception treatment. So if you've had donor treatment in the UK, or you're born from donor conception treatment, whether that's donor eggs or donor sperm, we've got information about donors that we can make available to people on request as well. So we've got lots of really important services out there for people going through treatment, people having donor treatment, and the people who were born from those donor treatments.
The whole point of us chatting about the new website is that we want people to go and look at the new website. What we want to do is give you an overview of what happens when you first look at it. So it's a much cleaner design, Juliet. So just tell me, when you first come to look at the HFEA website, what you hope a patient will then go on their journey to find.
I think that the way that we've tried to design the site is so that whatever stage of research or treatment that you're at, you'll be able to jump into information that's relevant to you really quickly. So from the homepage, there are different routes into information, and that might be, it might be that you know exactly a kind of treatment that you're looking for. Maybe you've been to see your GP and your GP says, I think you need intrauterine insemination. So if you know that term, then you can type that into the little search field on the homepage, and you straight away you're dropped into information about IUI. Or you might not really know about what treatment you're looking for, but you'll be thinking about what situation you're in. So we've presented the pages also according to what kind of couple you're in, whether you're in a straight couple or a same-sex couple. Are you having treatment on your own? Are you perhaps aged over 38? So that we can tailor information to people in particular circumstances. So the overall idea is that you get to information quickly that you need. And that might be about treatment, or that might indeed be about choosing a particular clinic where you have treatment.
Because I think with anything like this, there's so much information and you are a sponge when you're investigating your fertility choices, and you want people to read the right information that's relevant rather than just reading everything and being even more terrified.
That's right, exactly. Yeah.
All right, so Kathleen, let's talk a bit about then if you are looking to find a clinic, because you've got a very clear choose a clinic area that enables you to put in your postcode, and then you can put in kind of miles that you want to travel. I mean, I've always said try not to travel more than an hour, which is what I did when I was having my treatment, because if you are backwards and forwards, you don't want it to be stressful first and foremost, and you want it to be as easy a process as possible. So once you're there, you've got different information about the clinics, and you've got these different rankings and ratings about the clinic, things that patients have said. Can you just explain a bit more about what people find when they get there?
Sure. So once you've found or selected a particular clinic and presented with three ratings, you've got the inspection rating, patient rating, and the IVF birth rate. So the inspection rating is out of 5, and that's from where our team go into all the clinics in the UK to make sure they are up to the correct standards and that any treatment you do receive there will be safe. The IVF birth rate, again, it's based on statistics, and you can view those. They're all broken down into age range, different criteria. And the last category, the patient rating, is actually a new service for us, where we're encouraging patients to give their feedback on the experiences they've had during fertility treatment. So we want more than just success rates. We want how they felt during treatment, how they were treated by the staff, how they felt involved in decision-making processes, all the bits that aren't covered by statistics but are really important when you're choosing the right clinic for you.
Now, I know that that aspect, the patient rating, is quite a new thing. And when you're looking through different clinics, you will see that some of them haven't got patient ratings yet. And I know that you're really keen to encourage people, because ultimately, when I chose a clinic, I did look at the stats. I looked at your website. I looked at the stats. I was eligible for funding, so it was kind of down to my area. However, I hadn't then gone to rate it. I hadn't really thought about that.
What we have asked people to do is to only rate their clinic where they've had treatment in the last 12 months. So to be fair to clinics who may well have changed their approach, or if they've had negative feedback, improved and acted upon that, we ask people to rate the clinic if they've had treatment or indeed been a donor in the last 12 months. But yes, we're really keen to hear from people, partly for the clinics themselves, so that they can look at the feedback. And I should say that we publish the ratings straight on to Choose a Fertility Clinic about that a particular clinic. But we also ask people to give additional information, written information. That doesn't get published on the website, but it goes through to the clinic's inspector who work at the HFEA. And they're able to share that feedback with the clinic so that they can talk through how they're going to address it, either how they're going to make a good bit of feedback, the same, you know, a general experience for everybody, or how they're going to act upon perhaps an area that they need to improve upon. So it's for the clinics themselves, which is really valuable for them, but also it's for prospective patients who are choosing a clinic. And as Kathleen said, we want to encourage people to focus not just on birth rates. Obviously, they're really important, but they're surprisingly, there isn't that much difference in birth rates between one clinic and the next. And we can explain a little bit more about that in a minute. But actually, not to dwell too much on success rates, particularly small differences, a few percentage points, but to look a little bit more in the round about what it's like to be a patient in that clinic. And that's why the patient feedback is so vital for people who are looking for a clinic.
I mean, I've actually been fortunate enough to visit quite a number of clinics in the time since I had fertility treatment. And there is a real variety from how you feel when you walk in, from what the parking's like, from what the reception area's like, to the treatment areas. And it does make a real difference, and it is really worthwhile taking that time to ask questions and to go to the clinic if you can and what have you. So let's talk a bit about the birth rate, because it's interesting you say that, because that's one thing I looked at, and you don't really understand what you're looking at to be honest, I think, when you're first looking at these stats. And I know that some of the clinics don't have the birth rate listed. So just explain what we've got there to look at.
Actually, when you get to the main page of Choose a Fertility Clinic, one thing I'd really recommend looking at is our short animation, which we have taken some time to craft so that we're able to explain to people researching clinics, not just why the birth rate isn't necessarily the most important thing, or at least why it's important to think about other factors as well. But if you are going to look at birth rates, trying to understand exactly what they are telling you and what they're not telling you. One of the great things about Choose a Fertility Clinic is that it's the only place you can go which lists all the birth rate information about every clinic in the UK. And crucially, it presents the information in exactly the same way so that you know that you're comparing like with like. So if you go to a clinic's website, and most of them will publish their own birth statistics, and whilst they're not doing anything wrong in publishing maybe pregnancy rates for women under 38 or birth rates for blastocyst transfer or all kinds of different measures of success, they're not wrong. It's just that it's really difficult if you're comparing one clinic's website with another clinic's website, whether you're actually looking at the same measure and whether then you can meaningfully compare one with the other. And that's why we'd really recommend that if you're going to look at birth rates from a comparison point of view, come to Choose a Fertility Clinic, because we're measuring the same thing in the same way and you can see where there are similarities and where there are differences. And I think the other really important thing to bear in mind is that for us, the most important thing that clinic's birth rate is consistent with the national average. And that's because some clinics are quite small and they're doing maybe a few hundred cycles of IVF per year. And that means that chance can have an effect on their birth rate, their annual birth rate. And through doing nothing different themselves, they might have a different birth rate from one year to the next, just through the fact that some women get pregnant and some women don't, when they've had exactly the same treatment and they have exactly the same kind of history. So what we do is we try and look at whether there's any statistical, real meaningfully statistical difference between the clinics. And for most of them, there isn't a huge difference. And that's why at the top of the Choose a Fertility Clinic page, we say, is this clinic's birth rate within the national average? And where it is, we give them a big green tick.
So the ones that say not applicable, is that why?
No, where they are below the national average, and there's only a couple of clinics that applies to, there we will say that. Where it says not applicable, it's probably because that clinic has opened in the last year or two and we don't have any birth rates to publish yet.
But that's not to say, I suppose, as a patient, if it's a clinic in your area, to rule it out.
No, not at all. And in fact, that's probably a good question to ask the clinic if you do go and either look at their website or go for an open evening or a patient information evening to ask for more recent statistics that they might have, probably pregnancy statistics, but they're a good starting point.
All right, so we've covered the clinic. Now, one of the hot topics with regards to IVF, especially if you're self-funding, is add-ons, because at the end of the day, you need to really ask the questions and you really need to understand. I mean, I know, for example, I had treatment on the NHS. My mate who'd had fertility treatment said, whatever you do, have an endometrial scratch. So I was adamant that I was going to have one. I didn't really know much about it. And I've since learned all the issues about the evidence surrounding the endo scratch. However, I've said it to other people and I know that they've gone and done the same. And you're so guilty, I think, when you're hungry for this information and hungry, obviously, for success, to go to your clinic and say, I want this and I want that. We've had scaremongering about clinics adding treatment add-ons when they're not necessary. So for people to understand what they're all about, you've put them in a traffic light system, which explains the kind of evidence around them, because that's one of the key things with treatment add-ons is the evidence surrounding their success.
Yeah. So if you don't know what an add-on is, you've probably heard of an example of an add-on. So you mentioned endometrial scratch. There's also things like embryo glue. You might get offered drug therapies to help with implantation. You might be offered genetic screening. Other things that are slightly newer, like elective freezal, where you don't have a fresh transfer, you just have a frozen transfer. And things that are used in the laboratory, like time-lapse imaging, like EmbryoScope or some other products on the market. Some clinics include them as a sort of standard part of their treatment and might not charge extra for it. Sometimes you'll see in your bill, or you're offered treatments that might cost, you know, anything from a few hundred to several thousand extra on top of the IVF cycle cost. We're lucky at the HFVA in that we've got a panel of scientists that we can go to, or scientists and clinicians working in the field. And what they've done for us is they've gone through, we've started with 9 add-ons, and they have gone through all the scientific literature and the clinical literature that's been published. And they have made an assessment of how strong the evidence is for a particular add-on. And they have used 1 of 3 colours, a traffic light system, to demonstrate, to make it really clear to people reading the page how strong the evidence is for something. And actually, most of the add-ons, the traffic light is orange, because for many things, there usually is a little bit of evidence, or there might be one really good study that's occurred. But to be really sure that it's actually going to be worth paying extra for and will definitely increase your chance of getting pregnant, you need to PETA study and get the same finding twice, just to show that there's some proof. And so the traffic light system is based on how strong the evidence is. And I think for us, the most important thing is that patients get easy access to reliable information about this, and are really aware of whether or not they feel it's worth spending a little bit extra money on something. And sometimes it might be that the clinic says, actually, we're trying out this add-on in our clinic. At the moment, we're charging extra for it. We found some early evidence that it is beneficial, and we think it would be worthwhile trying for you. And that's fine. That's being completely open with people, that they're not completely convinced that it's going to improve this chance of success, but it's something worth trying. I think where we're worried as the regulator of fertility clinics is if patients aren't aware that something doesn't have a completely convincing evidence base. And that's why we've published this information, so they can get really clear advice on whether it's worth trying a particular add-on or not. So, for example, we've got some information about endometrial scratch, which has an amber rating, and it says that research consistently shows benefit, however further evidence is needed to show that there's a proof of benefit. And it also talks about, are there any risks or side effects with the add-ons? Often it's more a question of, there aren't risks or side effects, but we just need to prove that it actually has some added benefit. And so it's quite short information that gives and description of what the theory is behind the add-on, what the idea of it it's trying to address. So with endometrial scratch, the theory is that the procedure, the scratch, triggers the body to repair the site of the scratch, releasing chemicals and hormones that make the womb lining more receptive to an embryo and therefore improving implantation rates. So that's the idea. And then we talk through what the evidence is. And for endometrial scratch, it says early results suggest that endometrial scratching could increase pregnancy rates, although stronger evidence is needed to prove this. And then we also tell people that there's a trial going on. And so there are a couple of clinical trials in the country that people can get involved in if they want to take part in research. And with clinical trials, because there's no proof that this is a benefit, patients will not be charged for the add-on if they're part of a trial.
I was also under the understanding that the endo scratch was of benefit to women who had suffered recurrent miscarriage, but there's no mention of this could be right for you if, or is there in some of the ratings that you've got there?
In some of them, but not for endometrial scratch.
So again, it's so worth asking the question to your clinic for the evidence, looking at the HFE website and not feeling, I suppose, pushed into anything from anything that you've heard from anybody else, you know, because there's such a pressure that you want to do everything you can, especially if you're self-funding, isn't there? And you just want people to be clear that there's no wonder cure here with all these different add-ons, even though, I mean, I know, for example, a friend that's just gone through a third round and thank goodness is now pregnant, but they had time lapse this time round and the clinic had said to them that this was really, you know, something for them to invest in, and they were throwing everything at it this time around. But time lapse, like we know, I did a recent episode with an embryologist talking about the way it helps, but it's just really important that people ask these questions about whether it's relevant for their case, regardless of what they've heard.
Yes, absolutely. I think the thing that's really hard to accept when you're a fertility patient is that sometimes you have to have a second go at it. And that's not because the treatment was wrong first time. It's just because your chance of success is maximised by having 3 cycles of IVF. That's what the kind of medical guidelines say. And so when If it doesn't work first time around, I think there's a completely understandable feeling that maybe you need to change something, or maybe something should have been added into it to make the success rate more higher. And that isn't always necessarily the case. I mean, sometimes you have a treatment cycle and it becomes clear to the doctor or the embryologist that there is something that you do need to change for next time. But quite often, you just need to have a second go or maybe a third go. And I think that's where often treatment add-ons become very attractive to patients and sometimes to clinicians as well, because they want to help people have the family that they so desperate to have. And they're tempted to sort of try everything. And sometimes you kind of have to hold your nerve that the treatment is right. It just doesn't always work first time. Then again, there are new technologies coming into clinics and we do want treatments to improve and we do want the success rates to go up in future. So we're really keen to have new techniques developed, but it's really important to us that they're introduced into the clinic in the right way.
So if people are nervous about add-ons because of what the kind of negative press has been on it and they are self-funding, because this I think is even more relevant if you're self-funding or if you're eligible for treatment but on the NHS but these other things aren't on there, say somebody wants a certain thing and the clinic's saying to them it's not right, what would your advice be there?
I think it's really important to listen to your doctor. I think that they know what they're talking about. They've looked at all the information and they may well have looked at some of the same literature that our scientific panel have looked at. And yes, there are differences in medical opinions. Sometimes a clinic will be perhaps more likely to offer a new add-on. And so you may get, as you know, you get different things offered in different clinics. And I think if you feel really, really strongly about it and your clinic is not offering it and giving a good explanation of why not, but you're really not satisfied, then I think the only really advice I can give is to talk to another clinic but be careful to ask the right questions, to say, where's the evidence that people in my situation or patients that you've been treating recently have benefited from having this add-on? And if the clinic can answer that convincingly, then you can take that advice on board.
Make sure you do email Kate and I via talkfertility@gmail.com so we can continue to answer some of your questions, which we'll be doing in next week's episode. You can follow us both on social media. I'm at Fertility Poddy on Twitter and Instagram. Kate is at Your Fertility Journey on Instagram. And we'll be back with you again next week.